Sahana bhavatu, sahana bhunaktu, saha viryam karavavahai, tejasvi navadhitamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti.
Got a fantasy of having a pizza. What on earth? I didn't ask for it or anything. You just can't.
So, you be fulfilled?
No. Please don't. I'm on a diet. All right. Let's chant from 56 to... 58. Just those few verses will be done. Because we're almost done. I think we'll finish tomorrow. Wow. Tomorrow night we'll be done with them. Yeah. Unless I go off on a tangent with one of the verses. I don't think so. Mm-hmm. No, I think we'll probably be done tomorrow night. We'll see.
Vrittayastu tadanim
Ajñāta apyātma gocharāham
Ajñāta apyātma gocharāham
Smaranāt anumīyante
Smaranāt anumīyante
Yuttitasya samuttitāt
Yuttitasya samuttitāt
Vrittinam anuvrittistu
Vrittinam anuvrittistu
Prayatnat pratamadapi
Prayatnat pratamadapi
Adrishta sakrit abhyasa
Adrishta sakrit abhyasa
Samskara sachivat bhavet
Samskara sachivat bhavet
Yatha dipo nivatastha
Yatha dipo nivatastha
Ityadi bhir anekadha
Ityadi bhir anekadha
Bhagavanimam evartam
Bhagavanimam evartam
Arjunayanyarupayat
Okay, there's an interesting doubt that students often have that he's addressing here. And it's kind of similar to the deep sleep state doubt. Like say when you're in samadhi, if you're in that samadhi where there's no subject-object relationship anymore, it's just the jhana itself, just the kind of the aparoksha jnana, just your own nature, no duality, no knower, no duality. Then the doubt is, well, even though when that's not known in the samadhi state, if it can't be known at that time, then how do you even know you were in samadhi when you come out? Because when you're in the samadhi, there's nobody knowing it. You just are abiding there as the non-dual self. So then how do you know that you were in samadhi once you come out? That's the objection. Not objection. It's not really an objection. It's a doubt. That's this. The student wants to know what goes on there, what happens. So here, addressing that doubt, he says, Repeat after me. Vrittayaha.
Vrittayaha.
Tu.
Tu.
Tadanim.
Tadanim.
Ajnata.
Ajnata.
Api.
Api.
Atmagocharaha.
Atmagocharaha.
Smaranat.
Smaranat.
Anumiyante.
Anumiyante.
Vyutitasya.
Vyutitasya.
Samutitat.
Samutitat.
So this says, Vrittiyaha means the vrittis. The vrittis at the time of samadhi. So what vrittis? Vrittiyaha atma-gocharaha. The vrittis that have the self as their vishya. The gochara, when you say what is the gochara of the vritti? That's like saying, what is the vishya of the, what is the subject matter of the vritti? So like, for instance, if I'm looking at this room is the subject matter of the vritti. It's what is vritti gochara. It's what is filling the vritti. Another word we use is vishya. What's the subject matter? Like, say my mind now, the vrittis are focused upon the self, upon the atma. Then the atma, the self, is gochara, is the vritti gochara. That is the vishya, that is the content of the vritti. Okay? So here he says, when we're talking, this is in reference now to samadhi. So at the time of samadhi, the vrittis which have for their subject matter the self, the atma, even though then, tadanim, then, ajñātā, at that time, ajñātāha, those are not known. Those vrittis are not known. There's nobody saying, oh, look, I'm in samadhi. I'm having a samadhi experience. There's no kartha there. You know, did they say jnata? Let me just check something. Yeah. There's no jnata there. There's no knower there. So it says, ajñātā, so vrittiyaha plural, ajñātāha plural, one, and then api, then atma-gocharaha. So even though these vrittis then at the time of samadhi, at that time, when samadhi here means the nirvikalpa samadhi. Nirvikalpa samadhi, if you remember if you're holding the, as we'll see in the next verse also, but if you're holding your attention on to the self, if it's held for some time, it will just by degrees just become overwhelmed by the nature of the self. So the dhyata, the one who's meditating, the act of meditating, the meditation itself, all fall away, and what is left is just the object of meditation in terms of your experience because of the overwhelming nature of the self. So that's something that in nirvikalpa means really there's no vikalpa, there's no division. And also, just to be a little bit more technical, when you say nirvikalpa, it means at that time there is no subject-object relationship. There's no seer seen, hear or heard. So that vikalpa between subject and object, knower and known, is not there. Sleep in that way is nirvikalpa because it's free of, nirvikalpa means free of vikalpa, free of difference, free of division of any kind. And so in the deep sleep also, there's nirvikalpa in terms of the subject and the object, the knower and the known. Both of these are in, a causal condition. And so still, that experience is there, the deep sleep experience is there without anybody being able to say or saying, oh, I'm deep sleeping. You have to say that when you're awake and you remember it. It is the same in nirvikalpa samadhi is not the same as deep sleep. But what is the same is that in both nirvikalpa samadhi, there's no vikalpa, means there's no subject-object, no or known differentiation at that time. And in deep sleep, it's nirvikalpa, in terms there's no know or known differentiation at that time. So now he dealt with that also when we did in the deep sleep to some degree. Now he's dealing with it quite a bit here. So he says, the author, these vrittis that have the atma as their content, as their vishya, as their subject matter, that is what is filling that vritti. even though those vrittis that have the self as their subject matter, that are atma gocharaha, even though they are not known idanim then, at that time, because nirvikalpa, there's no subject-object differentiation, so there's nobody there up to know it. So the subject-object differentiation is resolved. So even though that's the case, still, he says, smada not, from memory, anumiyante, it is inferred. So, but here, smada not, vyutitasya samutitat. So it says, from memories, from smadana, of the one who has come out of, who is waking up from that state, so the, we would say actually from the memory that is samutitat is arising, so samutitat goes with smadana, from the memory which is coming up, which is arising, for the one who is vyutitasya, who has come out of that samadhi, who is awoken from that samadhi. So the view is the vi utita, that vi means coming out of that particular state. So it says from the memory for the one who has, that is arising, once you wake up, for the one who has woken up, who's coming out of that state, from the memory that arises for that person. And the memory is what we usually say, and he quotes here, at that time when I was meditating, he says, I was my mind was deeply absorbed, I didn't know anything. Isn't it the other thing here? He says, he doesn't say it here, but in the things that we quote, when a person comes out of the samadhi, they say, I was in samadhi. I was just only myself. There was no duality at all. You know, I was simply there as my being with no subject-object differentiation. It was just pure me. Okay, so it will be described for the person who is awake, who has come out of awake means come back into this world where the subject-object differentiation is available to the mind. So that person will describe that. In that way, or however they do. So he says, from that memory of the person who comes out of that state, once they're out of it, the memory that they have, it is inferred. We infer from the memory, because at that time when it is actually happening, we don't recall. It's actually called the. He says anumiyate means inference here, but it's actually also called a presumption or tapati, because what happens there, there's a little quote here. It says, yet smarayate tat anubhutam. That's the anumana. That is also an artapati, a presumption. So what this says is, whatever it be, whatever it is that is remembered, yet smaryate, tet tet anubhutam, that was experienced. And then he says, so whatever you remember it because you had that experience previously. And then he says something kind of important here. He says, this vyapti is lokasiddhatvat. He says, because this vyapti means this relationship is something well known and accepted by the people in the world. We accept this in terms of what is smriti. Smriti is a memory of what? Of something that happened before. Right? Otherwise, their memory is meaningless. So because we have a memory and we can describe exactly what happened, we say that we're inferring that because at that time the subject-object relationship wasn't there. But you have a clear memory of it. And so therefore, say, that is what happened to me. It goes a little deeper than that, though, that I want to describe a little bit. You can say through the memory, you can say, yeah, I was in nirvikalpa samadhi. But there's something else that's, I feel is even, I mean, that's interesting to understand that. Mm-hmm. But there's something else also. And that is the self that you are now, that you recognize. What you recognize as your being right now is not an inference. It's not an inference. It's not an artopathy. It's aparoksha. It's aparoksha. If it's you have self-knowledge, it's aparoksha jnanam. You have immediate, direct recognition of the self that is here right now. Okay. You can say, even as an ajnani, your self-experience is aparoksha. It's very well known to you, which is why they tell such stories as the 10th man story, where you realize that, you know, oh, the person that I am, the me that I am, is the one, you know, that is free. I am actually the one, the very one, that is the self of Ishwara, the self of all beings, the one that is non-dual. That is me, the one that I've always recognized as me, but I never knew that I was the self of the whole creation. But that one I know, okay? And then when I have this total recognition where you see it, it happens at the time of teaching also. It can only be like for a split second, but you see it. You recognize it. What do you recognize? You recognize that the one that you are is non-dual, is limitless, that there really is no second thing. That's what happens in Nirvikalpa Samadhi for sure. It actually happens even when you're having a perception of the world. It happens if that viveka is there. So you don't really need Nirvikalpa Samadhi where the whole world has been dismissed and you're just sitting as you're not even sitting yet. Self is not sitting, right? So your body is sitting and it's all completely relaxed. But then your experience is only of your being. But the thing is, it's your being. It's who you are, you know? And so now you realize that this me that is here, identified in one way or another with all of these upadis, body, mind, sense organs, is actually non-dual, limitless, because you have the direct, immediate recognition of that. And so when you come back from that samadhi experience, there is someone who hasn't come back and who never left, right? Which is me, which is my own self. So the samadhi experience, the good thing or the powerful thing about it is that the same self that is here right now is now, for the time being, completely undressed of any vrittis or of any perception of the creation at all. And so that's a very powerful experience. If it's taking place, as Vidyaranya says in the previous couple of verses, the nididhyasana is meant to do once that shravana and manana is complete. That nirvichikitsa, you already have recognized yourself, right? Within, but not necessarily within nirvikalpa samadhi. You've recognized yourself through viveka when there's a differentiation, a very clear, clean differentiation between your own self-experience and the experience of everything that can be objectified. One remains continually the same and it's never changing, never comes and goes. While absolutely everything else is coming and going, changing, right? So when you recognize that self, you recognize the constancy of your being, you recognize who you are, but then when you experience that exact same thing, not different, so the exact same thing, but without the creation, then there's a certain, you get kind of convinced. Because it's, The logic and the recognition, because just think of it, the logic, the yukti, and also the viveka that causes you to recognize the changeless nature of your being. You don't need, the world doesn't take that away. So you have that recognition, but somehow recognizing all of this, that my own being without the experience of the creation is something that's very, like a certificate, you know. It means a lot to have that. Now, that being said, that's not necessarily necessary to sit and work on having a samadhi experiences. These samadhis, what we call in the Vedanta, akanda akara vritti. So this is the word Swamiji uses all the time. In that, what we would call here, in nirvikalpa and savikalpa samadhi, In terms of this knowledge, we call akanda akara vritti. That means a vritti whose akara, whose nature or whose form is akanda, means undivided. There's no division in that vritti. What is the division? There's no subject-object division in that vritti. No subject-object. So there's no know or known. There's just the recognition of myself or the recognition of myself as Ishvara, where there's just one self with the Maya Upadhi, but there's still no subject-object recognition in the form of the jiva. You know, there's just me, maybe with an experience under the whole Ishvara, but just an experience of the self as Ishvara Swarupa, where there's no subject-object relationship. There's just me as that. So some piece of the Maya Upadhi is there. Or there's just the complete non-dual experience of me as just consciousness. That as this teaching is unfolding, something happens in your mind, you see it. And you see it, it may last a split second or a second or 2 or 3 seconds or whatever, but you recognize it, you know. And so those are the, we say in the teaching itself, that Shravana, Manana, and Nididhyasana take place. There's these moments of resolution where you get it, you see clearly. But those are little akanda akara vrittis that are meant to take place, because when we think of the pramana, the means of knowledge, what is happening is the mind of the student is being taken step by step by step to that kind of single pointed focus on your own being. So for a minute you have that, you know. Whether it's a minute or a second or 5 seconds or 10 seconds, it honestly doesn't make any difference, because the self is timeless. And so from the standpoint of that moment, that's a timeless moment. From the standpoint of the self, there's no time at all. So whether you're in samadhi for an hour or for 15 minutes or for a minute, doesn't matter. You see it. It is what it is. You see it. And there's no change of time. And then you recognize again, you know, as this knowledge takes place continually during the time of teaching and then during contemplation, when these little samadhi experiences take place, big or little, you continually get to recognize yourself, that now you see in a moment like this akanda akara vritti that we call, you recognize that self is exactly the self that is here right now. That's the big deal. It's a really big thing, because we are so have problems still. Most people have problems with this word ananda. You know? And so in that recognition, you understand really much more what is meant by ananda, as that which is the most dear, not a big bliss vritti. It's what is the most dear, which is ever present, no matter what types of vrittis that you're having, you know, that coming and going, vrittis coming and going. They don't ever touch in any way that the ananda of yourself, that nature, which is, we call that which is the most loved, the most dear. And so that's just an abiding fact. It doesn't need a sukha vritti. It doesn't need a shanta vritti. It is always there. If there's a shanta vritti, or a sukha vritti, or a dukkha vritti, or just a general, you know, middle of the road vritti, you know, the middle of the roaders, it doesn't make any difference at all. And so that self is always kind of the ever-present adhishtana support, you know, that every vritti you have enjoys 100%. And so your mind is never away from yourself. You know, just like the pot's never away from the clay, your mind is never away from that adhishtana, yourself. And when you recognize yourself, because in fact what is usually the most dear part of yourself, which is yourself, is superimposed on the body, in the mind, because I'm most dear. Like if I say, well, I'm the most dear, all of the things I do, I love people and I do this and I do that and I feel these desires, who am I doing all that for? You know? Really, when you analyze it, I'm doing it for my own fullness, for my own wholeness. Somebody who's a dharmanishtha, somebody who is totally devoted to dharma, it's not because dharma makes you miserable, but Bhagavan said, do it anyway. That's not why. It's because as we're our commitment to Dharma, the mind enjoys ananda. It enjoys a sense of wholeness and fullness and strength. It enjoys my own swarupa. So the more your commitment is to Dharma as opposed to these wrought binding desires, the more strong and whole and present my own being is. So there's a great commitment to Dharma for that reason, you know, because myself, I'm more myself when I'm doing Dharma, when the commitment is to Dharma. And when the commitment as Karma Yoga, when the commitment to Dharma replaces really completely, for the most part, I would say, your commitment to raga dvesha, you know, that are kind of binding desires, that commitment is a projection of the self. The commitment's a projection of yourself onto an object, and then you have a binding desire. To the degree that those are there, I have suffering. I suffer. You know? I suffer anxiety because I need to fulfill that desire in order to be happy. So there's a lot of anxiety. What if I don't have anything other than non-binding desires? And you will have desires, but because of your knowledge, because the swarupa, or what exactly you're looking for, what exactly you're looking for in fulfilling those desires, you already are that. And so then, why would I have a binding desire if I already am? And I don't mean just in your head. I already am the fullness that I was seeking by fulfilling these desires, then I have so much freedom. Then the desires are, you say, just the prarabdha, swecha. These desires are my desires. They belong to me. They belong to my prarabdha. And so let me be with those, but let them be non-binding. It's not a question about having the desires, but the binding nature of the desires fall out as you know them. As you recognize yourself. And so these nirvikalpa samadhis are something that are very helpful in that way. But not to think that you have to sit in meditation working to have nirvikalpa samadhi. It's also not correct. These nirvikalpa samadhis take place all of the time, even in the classroom and in moments of meditation. We're looking, we have some notions around that. Some people have notions, or some of us. Where nirvikalpa samadhi means I'm sitting in the deep meditation, and then nirvikalpa samadhi takes place, and now I've made it, now I have nirvikalpa samadhi. That's very colorful and whatnot, but it's not what you need. What you need is that viveka in the mind being able to then just turn toward yourself, and it happens all the time in teaching. So if we're looking for some big experience like Ramana, you know, because he's kind of the archetype for nirvikalpa samadhi. Okay? Mm-hmm. Then if you're thinking of that, then the chances of you ever thinking you have knowledge will be very minuscule. But we have to talk about these things, because these kind of notions can get in the way. You know, when will I have my nirvikalpa samadhi so that then I will have graduated to this knowledge? Mm-hmm. You have to recognize the nirvikalpa samadhi, actually for jnanis, you rest in this knowledge. Those moments of nirvikalpa happen all the time if you don't make a big deal out of it. It's just all these moments of recognition of your own changelessness, of your own presence. Your own presence that's not contaminated by emotions or vrittis or whatever, you know, that you identify with. So, anyway, this is an important point that he's making here, and that's one of the things I want to say. He says anumana, because if he says anumana, that means inference. He is conflating that, what they do sometimes, pulling two together with artapati. Artapati is presumption. So here's the difference between the two. If I am inferring something, if it was anumana, it must have to be, it has to be kind of happening at the time of the samadhi. Because when you wake up, that samadhi is not there. So an inference works like this. The two are happening simultaneously. So for instance, I see smoke on the hill, And I can infer that there is a fire because there's an invariable relationship between smoke and fire. So both are there. Right? The smoke is there, and so you can infer that fire is taking place. Arthapatti is called presumption. It's kind of similar to that. But the difference is that they're not happening simultaneously. So an example would be, and I've used this before for you, so it's kind of a stock example. If I wake up in the morning and there's just puddles everywhere, you know, even though the sky is clear and the sun is up, but there's puddles all over the place, I can presume that it rained last night. Right? I presume, it's a presumption. And because, and that can be a valid means of knowledge, because there's nothing else that anyone can think of that would cause, that could possibly accomplish that. You know, it's not like somebody watered the lawn. You know, it's like the whole area is soaking and there are puddles. So it's a valid presumption that it must have rained last night. And everybody, yeah, you know. It's an obvious thing for presumption. Now, here, because of this, what we call vyapti means this invariable relationship between memory, there's an invariable between memory and experience, right? That everybody accepts. And the invariable is this, you know, whatever I remember, yad yad smaryate, whatever I remember, that was experience. Tat tat anubhavam. Anubhava means experience. Whatever I remember, that was experience. Okay, so now, in that non-dual experience that we call nirvikalpa samadhi, I come out of that, right? And coming out of it, this memory of that samadhi rises. Right? The memory arises for the one who comes out of that samadhi, and they said, I was in samadhi. You know? I was in samadhi. There was nothing there but me. It was absolutely non-dual. You can go on and on describing it. Because that was your experience. Now you've come out of that experience and you have a memory of it. And so that is what we call, if we want to call it a type of inference, it's actually called arthapatti. It's a type of presumption. You see how that works? Because what else are you going to say? I was deluded. But then are you going to say that about every memory that you have? You know? Oh no, that wasn't, was that a memory? Was that a not a memory? We say, yeah, that was a memory. That was a memory that you had. But there's other things that support it. Because even though that was a memory, that what you are remembering is here right now. That's the amazing thing. It's like, because the self doesn't go away. You're just remembering, think of it like this, you're remembering yourself in that condition where the mind is in unmanifest, where the mind is in a total absorbed condition. Right? But the one who is there is the one who is here now, you know? And so that stays with you. So it's a memory of a state of experience in which you recognize that you, in fact, are non-dual and that this creation has nothing to do with you. It's a kind of like nothing to do with you in the sense that it doesn't limit you in any way. It has everything to do with you in the sense that Maya, you know, exists in Brahman. It doesn't have any place else to exist. But your swarupa, your nature, is not changed in any way by this creation. And Bhagavan gave us the dream drishtanta, the dream illustration, to strengthen this understanding. Because when you wake up from a dream, what do you realize? That I'm still here and nothing has happened at all to me. So that's why the dream drishtanta, and even being aware of yourself when you wake up from the dream, is a good exercise. Because you really, if you are kind of awake to that, or give yourself an auto-suggestion that when you wake up from the dream, to just notice the fact that you're still here, and this whole Maya, your little piece of Maya in this dream, was here and now it's gone, and nothing has happened. Because the Adhishtana hasn't been touched in any way. And so the mithyatva, what we mean by mithya, is so... the dream is such a beautiful example of it to work on that. So, there. Let's do the next verse. anuvrittinam anuvrittistu anuvrittihitu prayatnat pratamat api adrishta asakrit abhyasa samskara sachivat bhavet. Now another question arises, and that is, you know, when you go into from savikalpa into nirvikalpa samadhi, there's no will involved. There's will up until that point, you know, of you're sitting there, you're meditating, you know, you're withdrawing your mind and focusing it on yourself. That all involves some prayatna, some proper effort. So you have proper effort up to that time, but then all of a sudden you're in nirvikalpa samadhi, and there's no effort there at all. It's very, again, it's similar to the deep sleep. Like you prepare yourself for deep sleep, you get in the bed, you have the pillows all right, and everything's, the lights are out, and you cuddle up. And then at some moment, you are in deep sleep. But that point of transition from being awake into actually being in deep sleep is something that happens. It's not something that you do. You prepare the groundwork for all of that, by getting comfy and everything. But then that actually happens, right? It does without any effort. So it's similar. Here in Nirvikalpa Samadhi, you are, as in the potentially Yoga Sutras, there are stages, you know, up to pratyahara. I'm not going to do pratyahara right now, but from dhadana, go from dhadana to dhyanam, and then from dhadana to dhyanam, and then in dhyanam from samadhi to nirvikalpa samadhi. And so dhadana, in fact, he had brought that dhadana up earlier. Let me see if I want to do that right now. In verse 54 and 55, he's talking about, you know, when the mind, the first thing the mind does is it sets itself. This is dhadana. The mind sets itself on a particular place. It connects itself with a particular place. That place could be something external. It could be internal. Here it could be the mind sets itself, secures itself on the nature of the self. So the mind now focuses on the self. That's dhadana. Your ability to get what we call an anuvritti, a repeating thought process, a repeating vrittis, like a flow of vrittis, that's called dhyanam. So first being able to have a single pointed focus on the object of the dhadana, right, which in this case is the self, that's dhadana. Dhyanam is being able to hold that. And in the holding of that, you know, there becomes with that anuvritti, that will first, if you can hold it, that will first become samadhi, savikalpa samadhi, because the mind has an anuvritti, a flow, a continuance of one vritti after another, focusing on the same self. And when that, as that happens, all other objects of focus go away. And when those other objects of focus go away, you have savikalpa samadhi. Because you're still aware of your mind that is meditating on the self. So this, what we call this triputi, these three things are there. The meditator, the vyatra, the meditating, right? The act of meditating, and then the object of meditation. All three are there. But then as you hold it, that flow of vrittis continues, what happens is the meditator and the dhyatra and the act of meditating, they resolve, and all the only thing that's left is the jaya, is the atma. And that's nirvikalpa. Because now, even though there's what, I'm just reminding you of these terms, even though there's an ati sukshma vritti, it's not that there's no vritti, there's an ati sukshma vritti there at that time, because then you have recollection when you come out of it. Still, there's no experience at all of any subject-object duality. There's just only your pure self without any other type of experience. It's just the non-dual being, that's all that is there at that time. So here, he explained that in 54 and 55. So now here he says, he points out, you know, this anuvritti. He says the vritti nam anuvrittihi too. Based on this question, you know, nobody's there to make this happen, you know. So he's answering that. He says, for those vrittis, the anuvritti of those vrittis, the continuous flow, you know, anuvritti of those vrittis, prayet not pratamat api, is initially pratamat, initially from prayatna, from effort. So first you're making an effort for that, the dharana and the dhyanam. We can start with that there. There's an effort to get that anuvritti. But then that effort being there and that anuvritti, that continuous flow that starts to happen, effortlessly, without any will involved, it then resolves into nirvikalpa samadhi. Now he gets, so it's going, the effort, you can say, he's going to do a little bit more. He's going to say the effort, this effort is what happens preceding, first of all, just preceding this meditation, the preceding the nirvikalpa samadhi, the immediate preceding from dharana and jhanam, and sadhikalpa samadhi. But then also, there are other precedents that allow the mind to even be able to gain that flow, that anuvritti. Gaining that anuvritti, that flow of vrittis, that itself, he says, take some punya. So this is how he talks about it. He says, adrishta. Here the adrishta is punya, adrishta karmas. So adrishta, and then asakrit, two things. So adrishta, punya, and asakrit abhyasa, samskara. And then the samskara, so the samskaras that come from the adrishta karmas from punya, and from what? Asakrit abhyasa. Abhyasa means repetition. Asakrit means more than once, you know. So continual repetition. In other words, I start sitting to meditate. Even sitting in class, that's an abhyasa itself. Abhyasa just means repetition. So say, for instance, when you're in class, there's a continual repetition of this knowledge. Same knowledge. It's like the elephant dancing on a post. The same knowledge is being told and unfolded in many, many different ways. So there's some scars in terms of the nature of yourself that are continually happening in the class itself, you know. Then when you do nididhyasana on your own, there's the continual practice of the dhanana, you know, gently focusing on your own presence, you know, holding that focus. That's the gently focusing on your own presence, holding those vrittis, keep bringing them back as they go away, so you keep that focus. You're developing an anuvritti there. You bring it back, keep the focus, you hold the focus, it goes away, bring it back. You're creating a samskara, right? And then be yourself. Is this just a subtle little change? You're focusing on yourself. And then you're being yourself. There's a subtle change there. When you're focusing on yourself, your buddhi has the dharana. It's got the focus then. That's the buddhi has the focus. And then the holding the focus is the dhyanam, you know. And then that little step of just being yourself makes the self become the self that you are now is there as yourself, which the buddhi is focusing on. So just a slight little shift. But as you do this continually, not, I don't mean continually in terms of hours or anything like that. It's just like now we do this meditation, or doing a meditation every day, or you do your own meditative practice. You're developing a samskara, right? Through the abhyasa, asakrit abhyasa, through repeated practice. And why would you even do this in the first place? Because of adrishta punya. There's a punya there. That even they consider in the shastra to even have this interest in the Upanishads, in Brahman, in the Advaita Vedanta. They even have that inclination that mumukshutvam is considered a great punya. And now think of what would make a person, you know, sit in class every day for several hours a day. Who would do that? You know, listening to the elephant dancing. Who's going to do it? You know? What kind of samskara is there? It's considered so much punya in the Viveka Chudamani in those first three or four verses. And they say, what an ascharya, but what an incredible, what a wonder. You know, to even be, to gain, it's considered a huge punya to even gain a human form, human body. You're so much in the minority when you think of all of the different jivas just that are embodied right now. You have to think of all of the mosquitoes, all of the worms, all of the birds, all of the bees, all of the fish, all beings. You're in such a small, small minority compared to all of the jivas that are manifest right now, let alone the ones that are in other lokas. It is such an incredible minority. And then to have a buddhi, you know, to have viveka, to just, buddhi means, you know, to have that viveka, that's even more of a minority than having that vibhuti to have the mumukshutvam, you know, more of a minority. And then to find a teacher. You should find a teacher if you're a mumukshu. So I put those two together, to be a mumukshu and to have a teacher. It's getting smaller and smaller. Number of people who have any interest in this at all, in any real way, I mean. And then, he goes on and on. Then to actually be able to listen to the teacher, and then to understand what the teacher's talking about, you know. Then to actually gain this knowledge. You know, he has three or four, they're going all the way. So each time it's ascharyavat, this time. This is a Bhagishananda word, ascharyavat. Yeah. And what an incredible, amazing wonder that is. And then to think, you know, to have a mind that wants to know and then will sit and contemplate on it. Yeah, that means that person's not normal. not normal in this sense. Does everybody know what the normal curve is? This is the normal, it's a graph, you know, it's a statistical thing. There's this normal curve, it looks like this. You know the normal curve? And so up here in this part, you know, it's like 64% on either side, you know, are the vast majority of the people in this thing. And then you have down here, there's a much, much fewer. And then we call, there's these extreme outliers. you can't even measure them because they're too tiny, you know. So the mumukshus are the outliers, you know. So I think that's a beautiful thing to actually realize that, you know, and just know how very special it is to actually take this birth and have this upadhi, you know, where the samskaras, these tendencies are there. You know, we don't know what we all came with from our last birth, you know, but the samskaras for this knowledge are there, so that when you hear it, you know, you know. You've just been waiting for somebody to say it. It's like it's a memory, even though you didn't have prior knowledge, really. It's a memory, like a memory. So because of all of these samskaras, and now to be able to even want to turn your attention toward yourself, to really recognize the truth of all of this as it happens at the time of teaching, and then just to, we say nididhyasana, it's just being the mind, the buddhi, being with myself, so that it really is able to own this knowledge and get used to being me, basically. The mind now has to get used to being me. And so it takes so much, as the traditional, so much punya to get to this place. That's the adrishta. And then what has had to happen before one just goes from dharana and the dhyanam, the savikalpa, that's practice. That's abhyasa, over and over and over. Having done this, having turned your attention to this until the mind is actually able to do it. So you turn your attention just to be with yourself. You have to kind of keep recognizing the ananda. The mind will go anywhere if there's ananda there. So as you start to realize the beloved nature of yourself, the mind wants to be there. Like if you think the beloved, what is beloved to you is out here, the mind wants to be there. But as you discover that your own being is that, then the mind wants to be there. That's what, that its choice, because it's always, you know, seeking ananda. It's always, a better way to say it, it's always seeking myself. And so because of that abhyasa, because of previous lifetimes and the adrishta that's been born, this anuvritti, which means the mind's flow of similar vritti, all of the self, all vrittis, equal vrittis, equal vrittis of my own being, fructify in nirvikalpa samadhi. Not because I can decide that, just like you don't decide when you're going to fall asleep, you just do. And you don't decide when's the nirvikalpa going to take place. You can't, let's do it right now. It's not like that. That's why all of these preparatory things are there. Even right now, when you're practicing meditation, we're doing nitta dhyasana, you don't just close your eyes and you're in nirvikalpa samadhi. The mind goes through that process, even if it's really fast, it goes through that process. It has to. The mind, the buddhi, has to focus on the self. You know, it has to hold that dhadana, it has to hold that focus. There has to be an anuvritti started, and that will mature into the nirvikalpa samadhi. So that's how he wanted to answer that question. Okay. So it is such a satchivat. So what this says, vrittinam, the anuvritti of these vrittis, the flow of these vrittis, even though, he says, they require this prior effort, he says. And from that prior effort, which is really what? He says the prior effort. It's both from the adrishta karma and from that abhyasa, more that practice, where that samskara is developed from that practice. He says through the aid of that, satchiva, means through the friendship, through the aid of that samskaras, which are developed by what you brought with you, punya, and also through the repeated practice, which you also probably brought with you and are doing again now. That's it.
Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.